Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my special guest is a dear friend, Melissa. Melissa is a lifelong experiencer of extraordinary contact. Her first memory of interdimensional beings was being taken on board a craft with the Greys. Melissa comes from a family of military service and now has a clear understanding of the connection between her paranormal worldly experiences and her personal background. So without any further ado, welcome Melissa to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hey, James. Thanks. I'm so happy to be here.
Likewise. Well, we got a lot of ground to cover. Tell us about your background, your childhood, and perhaps your genetic history too, because it factors into all of this.
Not to be redundant, I have been outspoken. I have a few videos on my own YouTube channel, and I have been interviewed, but the long and short of who and what I am is a mother, became a mother 20 years ago, and started having, in the summer of 2008, started having some really bizarre experiences. And those experiences involved suddenly having, out of the blue, dreams of being abducted and by crafts in my dreams, and my son and I trying to protect my son from being abducted. And then I was having all kinds of paranormal stuff. And so that year in 2008, I guess I had suppressed my childhood experiences, but that really was the awakening for me that I could not ignore this contact, this paranormal ET, gray, UFO, alien, military abduction contact that would really start getting super intense that year. And I sort of went through a period where it was the dark night of the soul, if you will. And I was able to recall, you know, as a child, my experiences and situations, kind of the synchromystic, you know, soup that I was a part of. And it's been a lifelong journey, but it's been a really incredible journey, I'd say, the last 20 years. So that's how I came to be kind of outspoken about my abduction and contact experiences is because of how it all kind of came to fruition and came boiled to the surface in 2008.
For me, it was 1990. There were things that happened in 1988 that were highly suspicious, but it kind of came together in 1990 because things had become so in my face and so overt that I was forced to have to deal with it. Tell us about your childhood and what was it like in your formative years and what you remember as far as paranormal type experiences growing up.
I had a pretty traumatic beginning in life. My birth parents were very young. My father was in the United States Air Force. He traveled abroad. He was stationed overseas at various, I think I've shared with you, I know one of the places was Guam, but he worked, I think, near some pretty top secret, you know, bases. He did have a top secret clearance. He was a staff sergeant, and his position was aircraft mechanic, HVAC for the planes. He was actually stationed in a place called Homestead Air Force Base in Miami, Florida. And that's where he met my mom. She was 15, very young. They got pregnant with my sister. Then their marriage was really on the rocks. My dad was a hippie. He pretty much got kicked out of the military due to partying too much acid, too much exploration. You know, the time was like 1971, 72, 73. And he was done. He was fed up with it. And then I came around, and then my parents' marriage dissolved. And my father was left alone with a one-year-old me and my sister, who was almost three. And this was really devastating for him. So he made the difficult decision to bring us up to our relatives in the same state, but to be raised while he could get his feet on the ground. And unfortunately, it didn't happen for him. He just really was a broken man. And so my sister and I became adopted by our relative. Our adoptive father, so just to clarify, my adoptive mother is actually my cousin. And her husband was a naval intelligence officer. And he had been stationed in the 1967 through 9 in Honolulu, Hawaii. And he worked on submarines and underwater photography. He would later get pulled into satellite imagery, and he continued to work in the intelligence for the, I think it's the National Reconnaissance, something, NRO maybe.
National Reconnaissance Office.
Yeah, with the Naval Intelligence, dealing with satellites. And I always felt like he had an important job, but I didn't really know that that sort of would tie into my paranormal experiences until much later. And by that age, I mean like probably 19. So my childhood was very disruptive. Trauma from being abandoned by my birth mother. There was sexual molestation and abuse. I was in multiple homes before I was actually home, you know, adopted. And it really, you know, all of that is just very traumatic for any child under the age of 10, but especially under the age of 5 and 3, when those are the formative years. I do think that the trauma opened me up to be psychically, emotionally, and spiritually gifted. I feel like it helped cultivate a hyper awareness and intelligence that I otherwise maybe not. I mean, I don't know if it's DNA or not, you know, if we're chosen in this aspect, but I really feel like the trauma opened me up to being sensitive and to be able to be psychic and have kind of precognition. And a lot of these paranormal experiences, I believe, are also tied into just that forced awareness of consciousness that one tends to go through, where they either separate their trauma or they integrate it in a way to make it work for them. And I think I made it work for me, which is why I think I've been able to overcome a lot of that. Because there's a lot of kids that don't make it this far in life having gone through that sort of trauma. My father's work, my birth father's work with the Air Force, you know, was pretty impressive, but his father was also in the Air Force. And my grandfather, whom I never met, actually had a patent. He invented the hydraulic boom for refueling planes over the ocean midair. And he received a meager $500 for this patent, you know, and I'm assuming because this would have been, you know, 1940s or 50s that he was in the Air Force. And it wasn't much, but it was something my dad was always proud of and always said, you know, well, your grandfather did this. And it's like, oh, that's cool. And I never really thought about it until, you know, piecing together all this military history and this sort of lineage, both adopted and biological. So.
As a girl, what were the first paranormal experiences or dreams you had that were unusual, frightening? Did you have any like psychic ESP type experiences as a young girl and teenager growing up?
The first out of kind of range, atypical, what I would consider to be an outlier experience was when I was 4 years old. We were living with our adoptive parents in a newly built home. My sister and I were outside on a summer day playing in the sprinkler because it was really hot because I live in the South and we didn't have a pool. So we'd have to, you know, cool off by the sprinkler. And I remember watching the stream of water and the little droplets and all the light hitting each droplet and just thinking how miraculous, you know, the sun and the reflection and nature was. And I watched as my sister just gracefully leaped over this stream of water. And she was so absent-minded. And all I could think of was, who's thinking these thoughts? Whose body is this? Whose hands are these? Who's, you know, where am I? I hear my voice, but where's the voice coming from? So at a very early age, I was very conscious and it was scary because I looked around me and I didn't see my sister remotely capable of having that level of intellect. And I didn't see that my parents did either, my adoptive parents, because I was a very emotionally sensitive child. I was easily upset by violence, very sensitive to animals and trees. I didn't like to see wood burn because it was a tree and it was alive and I felt the pain of the tree. So as a very young child, I guess for me, kind of the first thing I would say, it's not the ET stuff, but it's knowing that you're so sensitive that you're told you're weak, you need to be strong, you need to let it, you know, grow a backbone, you need to stop crying and everything at the drop of the hat. And I just knew I was really different. The paranormal ET stuff really started for me when I was about 8 years old. I was entering, or right about then, in third grade. I didn't understand. Every night I would have a reoccurring dream of this ginormous wave from the ocean. And this wave would overtake the houses, the people. It was so high. It was, you know, you couldn't even see the sky. And I didn't know what it was called, but every night in my dream, I would see the destruction around me and myself. I would die, be drowning in this huge tidal wave. And I was actually getting physically sick from the stress of having this reoccurring nightmare. And I didn't know that it was called tsunami. At that point in third grade, we hadn't learned in science, you know, about, you know, these nature, these cataclysms and whatnot. And I really didn't have any perspective on what was happening. But then around that same time, I would say probably within 6 months of those reoccurring dreams, which occurred for about a month, I just remember breaking down and just wanting to die in the waking hours, because it was like I was being put through hell at night. Like, I didn't have restful sleep. I was having very vivid dreams of being chased by demons, of witnessing very violent, almost satanic acts by family members against other family members, just feeling haunted and hunted. And I wasn't into spooky movies. I wasn't into horror stuff. I was terrified of things that were out. I did not watch horror movies, but about 6 months after I think this happened, with the reoccurring tsunamis, I didn't remember this, just to clarify this for the viewers, I didn't remember this until 2008. But what happened in that same year of third grade was I had an experience where I was taken off world. I don't remember how this happened, but all of a sudden I'm looking out a window and I'm looking at the earth. And I was obviously in outer space, because you don't see the earth from your house or your yard. You see the moon or you see the stars. But I was literally viewing the sphere, this beautiful globe that we're on. And I just remember saying, oh my God, how beautiful. This earth is so precious. And then, how am I going to get home? If I'm here, that means can I ever go home? Can I get back home? How do I get back home? And my recollection isn't perfect on this, because again, I didn't even remember this encounter that I had until 2008. So I don't know which came first, but in that same experience, I was in a room that was all white and I was with adults, and I don't recall knowing any of them, but it was an all white room, and it looked like there were screens, sort of like a big computer monitor. I have a MacBook, so it's like a big square. But I remember like 3D screens of these beautiful images, and almost like a movie reel of the earth, flowers and fauna and green fields and waterfalls. And the colors were like these azaleas. They were, but even brighter. They were prismatic. They were almost neon and breathing. If you've ever done acid or hallucinogenics and everything is just coming at you with life and breath and energy, that was the earth. And we were all, me and the other adults on this, I guess we were on the ship in this room, we were viewing the real earth. And I remember hearing in my head, this is the real earth. This is what the earth looks like. And then all of a sudden I don't know what they saw, but I know what I'm seeing. I'm seeing the earth again. And it's so hard. It was being destroyed. The earth was wobbling, like, you know, like it normally rotates. So I'm observing it from a perspective of looking through a window. And then all of a sudden it starts speeding up. And then all of a sudden it starts sort of wobbling. It stops, it reverses, and just starts going just fantastically fast. And then there's smoke, there's fire, there's bombs, there's charred mess. And I never saw like an explosion, but I came to realize that this is what was going to happen. I knew viewing this that I was being shown the future of Earth, because the next thing that happened was I had a gray standing above me, and I wasn't afraid of this gray, and it wasn't a small gray. It was a tall white gray. And I know there were others around, but I don't remember them. I just remember this one. And he like leaned down and said, you need to stop this. You need to stop people from destroying the Earth. And you have to tell your president, you need to get in touch with your president and tell him to stop. And I was like, you know, I was 8 years old. Okay. And I was like, I'm just a little girl. I don't have any power to do that. I can't even meet the president. You know, like, it's impossible. And just that crushing weight of feeling so emotionally and physically responsible for this planet as a child was just impressed upon me that it was like I was being tasked with this and I was already failing because I couldn't get audience with the king, you know, with the president. And I had suppressed that whole experience, okay, until like 2008. But what was happening simultaneously with all this is I was having very violent nosebleeds at night. And I would wake up and I would be either head at the foot of my bed and feet where my pillows were, or I'd be dropped on the ground because my bed was an old-fashioned wrought iron bed. It was an antique. And it was about this high off the ground. And all of a sudden I would find myself, boom. And I'd like, ow, you know, what happened? Because I had a full-size bed to myself. I didn't have to share it with anybody. There was no reason for me to fall off the bed. And I just had some weird things going around at that time. But that long-winded is the first time, the first conscious memory. And again, I've said this before, I've never done hypnosis. This has all been conscious recall.
What you described actually happened to me, because I've spoken about this, where I had an encounter when I was 4 years old with a little brown being in my bedroom in Texas, and told everyone about it for years. And then, you know, come the first, second grade, no, I was still telling people about it in second grade. By then, we'd moved to Daly City, California. But then abruptly, I just forgot all about it. It was gone from my conscious memory until years later, early 1990s, in the wake of what I thought was a failed regression, hypnotic regression. I read something in a book which triggered the memory, and the whole thing came out into my conscious awareness again. Like, it was always there. It was just somehow repressed. And I've always felt that in the case of certain abductees, it's almost like we have an inbuilt alarm clock, if you will, where at a certain point in time, you're supposed to become aware of the stuff that's going on. You may not have the big picture, but in broad outline, you have an idea. Now, growing up, going into teen years, adolescence, teenage years, going into young adult age, what were some of the formative experiences there, not only phenomena-wise, but as far as social interactions, as far as, you know, young girl going through bodily changes, hormonal changes? What was going on in that period of your life?
Well, to, I guess, circumvent the going back, again, 2008 was not only a reckoning for me to just realize that they were in my life in real time that year, but that they had always been. And it was like the patterns and the memories and the placement, the chronological order of all of this paranormal just lined up like douche, 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 like, you know, just irrefutable. Couldn't chase it away. Couldn't sleep it away. Couldn't think it away. It was in your face and there was nothing that was going to stop it. As a newly adopted child, okay, and this is something that it's horrible, but it happens all the time. You know, my sister and I were both molested. And I know that this happens a lot in military intelligence or at the upper echelons of these darker, nefarious individuals who are really entrenched in this. And you really don't climb the social, not the social, but you don't climb the ranks, rather, in the military service unless I think you're sort of depraved. And without, you know, obviously giving his identity, my father was an officer. He was an E7, which isn't the highest, but considering the nature of his work, you know, I don't know, you have to just factor everything in. But what was interesting with me is I was told by my adoptive father that the abuse, the sexual games, and perversion was going to end one day. And he told me I wasn't invited in the showers and wasn't invited in the bed, that it was just going to be him and my sister. And so at that fork of the road, my relationship with my intelligence, naval adoptive father became one of highly spiritual, highly intellectual, you know, very psychically, we would have these really deep conversations in my formative years, so between 8 and 14 years old, of reincarnation, of aliens, of past lives, of nature, of war. It was like I was being groomed to be the higher thinking child, and my sister was being used as a sexual victim. And I knew this on a subconscious level, but none of this made sense to me until I got to that 2008 mark. And what I realized, my adoptive parents kept my sister and I from just this close to becoming separated in the child welfare system. And I started looking at, you know, in 2008, the MK Ultra program, you know, a foster care program, the military involvement with pedophilia and sex trafficking of children. And you really, and then, you know, the whole UFO and paranormal and psychically gifted kids, you start getting a greater sense of all these little dots that just really, really line up. Socially, as a young person, I felt like such an outlier. And I was so aware spiritually and emotionally of things that I could not, I had to fake being my age. I had to fake being normal. I had to fake being in this body. I had to fake, you know, I was interested in boys, of course. I always had a best friend, but I never felt normal. I felt like there was something different about me, and I knew there was. I was very developed as a young girl, more developed before than I would say my peers. I was on the higher end, so I was in gifted programs for art and history and creative writing and English and whatever, but I was in basic math classes, so I was really hyper developed in some areas. And then I did come to find out that there's a term for it. It's dyslexia with numbers. I just can't hold them in my head. I cannot see them. And I always felt really, really dumb about that. So that really didn't help, but I sensed that there was something greater than this whole life of just being a teen. I would walk outside. I would look at the stars. I would talk to the stars and say, I know you're out there. Please come and get me. I came across a book in my living room that was very popular in the 80s. Well, came out, I guess, what, 85? Whitley Strieber's Communion. My father had it. My adoptive father was reading it. And it had that face. And I would walk past the book and I would turn it over because it scared me. And then I'd come back out to the kitchen and I'd walk back and the damn book would be facing up again. And I was like, God damn it. And slammed the book over because I could not look at it. Well, about the third time of doing this, I said, what is this? What, you know, and I pick it up and I start thumbing through it. I read it in like, I was 16. I read it in like a night. Instantly, I felt a kinship and a connection to Whitley. It's like I knew him, and no, that experience was not mine, but I believed him and I felt such a deep empathy and connection to all of what he was sharing. About 2 weeks later, I was sitting outside my front porch. I was 16. So this was like 1990, 90, 91, about the time that you said your stuff was hitting heavy. I was sitting outside, beautiful summer night, and all of a sudden I see this green star in the sky. And I'm like, well, that's really interesting. I wonder if it's a planet. Well, it started moving closer, but there was no sound. And then I was observing and I thought, okay, it's probably a plane or a helicopter. I'll wait to see the other flashing white light or flashing red light. There was nothing. This was a continuously illuminated green star. So it's moving towards me and it's still. And there was a stillness in this moment of observing it. I began to be aware of it seeing me. I got chills. And me seeing it, it was like an unspoken, telepathic, energetic resonance. And it knew me. And it knew I was looking at it, and I knew it. It was like an old friend without a face. And I'm out here alone, outside, and I'm like, whoa, there's no sound. There's no flashing lights. And I've never seen a plane this color or a helicopter this color. Well, then all of a sudden, it starts doing these weird maneuvers like, bzz, bzz, and then it went, bzz, and then it hovered. And then I was like, okay, this is a UFO. And immediately I got scared. And as soon as I felt that flood of fear, I felt it reacting almost with pain and, you know, a disappointment, like a letdown. And it went, and it just zapped off in the sky. The next thing I know, I don't even remember how I ran off the porch. I was down the street chasing it, asking it to come back and telling it, I'm sorry. I just was afraid and please come back. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to run you off. And that was my first experience. So the book Communion and Whitley Strieber was absolutely a portal for opening up that consciousness of them at 16. I hadn't yet had the connection and the memories of 8, the tsunamis and the being on the craft and seeing the earth. I hadn't had that awareness at that time, but there's these certain moments in my life. Again, I was a young person. I was a fertile 16-year-old, you know, had a lot of gynecological issues, just a lot of pain. I would miss a lot of school. I was just, you know, I wasn't sickly, but I felt like my body, I was going through things. And I often wonder, you know, because they start the breeding program with young women at that age and young men. I wonder if that was contributing to a lot of my, you know, really painful, you know, the lives, the weeks that out of the month that I had to endure was, it was really awful. But like I said, I didn't put all this together until 2008.
That book was also formative for me. Like I've said in other podcasts, I cleaned out basically this B. Dalton's bookstore at Eastridge Mall in San Jose. And that was the last book. I kept putting it off. And then to rewind, 88 was a big year, although I didn't realize it ET-wise, right? And When that book first came out, when I would see the display, like out in front of the bookstore, I would literally go out of my way to avoid it. I would just turn away because there was something about that, that I've heard other people say the same thing. There was something about the book cover and the being on it, which scared the hell out of us. And then yeah. I read the book, and because it was the last book left, I'd read all these Betty Andreasen books and other books. There was only one. It was Communion. I was forced to read it. And then when I read it, and he was talking about his first conscious, I think it was, abduction as an adult at the cabin in upstate New York. And he made a comment in there which hit me like a ton of bricks. He was being carried away by these beings. And he said, the physical sense, in so many words, that the physical sensation of him being handled in such a way, being carried away, he said something to the effect, I knew there was something really wrong, right? And that hit me like a ton of bricks, because in September 1990, when I had that full waking consciousness experience, right, that was something that had really gone wrong. Mm-hmm. Because that was a bunch of experiences leading up to that moment, And then when that happens, it's like there's no turning back, really. For some people, they can find this happy medium, I guess, where they can push those experiences to the back of their mind and not think about it and try to carry on. But some of us are more curious. We have to know what the bottom line is. And if you get a moment, if you haven't already done so, find the book Report on Communion, because Ed Conroy, if memory serves, that was his name. He was an investigative journalist, and he decided to delve into childhood and the background of Whitley Strieber. And there was all kinds of stuff, because some of his childhood friends remembered Whitley talking about these things. And and Whitley had built some kind of a machine that he was getting these ideas from, these ETs. And long story short, it knocked out the power grid in his neighborhood, right, when he was just a boy. So, you know, things like that, you know, factor into this. And then when you realize piece by piece that, you know, crikey, these kinds of things have happened to me, that takes it to a whole nother level. So we've reached the end of a fascinating first segment. It's entirely up to you if you'd like to leave contact information. If not, I can ask the readers, if the listeners rather, and viewers, if you're so inclined, that if they want to reach out to you, they can reach out via me. So you don't have to give them any private.
That would be wonderful. If anybody wants to get in touch with me, just send a message to James, and I'd love to.
Right. And we're just getting into it, because we're going to get into some really spooky stuff, because the military intelligence connection comes back to the fore later in Melissa's life. There's a very spooky surveillance monitoring aspect which comes to the fore. So anyhow, you've been watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show with my guest, Melissa. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.